to lead people, to guide them, to get close to them, to discover, to craft a vision and direction of where we needed to go. I was lost, completely lost.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, so glad you could be with us today. Have a great guest who I am looking forward to our conversation based on in some pre-conversation that we had, one statement he made, which I am looking forward to sharing with you. His name is Pierre Quinn. He is a speaker, leadership coach, consultant who focuses on helping others to assess their strengths, understand organizational culture, and foster the relationships that lead to personal and professional transformation. And which of us doesn't need that? He's the author of Leading While Green, How Emerging Leaders Can Ripen Into Effective Leaders, and also Leading While Scared, How to Find the Courage to Keep Going, which I know not a few leaders have needed that specific help over the last 6-8 months. He's the CEO of the Cardell Group, LLC, a consulting firm focused on growing leaders and empowering teams of all sizes. Pierre, thank you for being with us. I'm looking forward to our conversation here on Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
It's my pleasure, David. Thanks for having me.
So Pierre, I like to ask every guest, and I'm going to take you back now. You get to go as far back as you want to, but yeah, for your earliest memory of yourself as a leader.
Wow. Like, my life just flashed before my eyes. I'm trying to pick out one.
Hopefully not in a bad way.
No, in a good way, So many positive memories. I'm going to go back to college. There was freshman year at a small school, Southwest Michigan, Andrews University, about 3,000 students in total. I grew up on the eastern side of the state, close to Detroit, about 30 minutes north of Detroit. So wanted to go to school close to home. Ended up on the western side of the state during freshman orientation. They said, who's going to run for class office? And, you know, my friends and I are looking around at each other, not interested at all. And someone says, Pierre, you should run for president. So that's, no one wants to do that. I'm not interested at all. I barely want to be here. So I don't want to run for president. But it came the day for election speeches. And one of my friends, I think, dared me. He said, I dare you to write a speech right now and put it in and go up and give it for the presidency. And I gave the speech. And based on popularity of the speech, I won freshman class president. And then I spent the majority of my freshman year realizing that I had no idea what it really took to be a leader. So I struggled. I struggled in that experience, but it taught me a lot of lessons.
Wow. So I can't say that I have ever heard anybody say, you know, my initial experience as a leader really came from a dare. Somebody dared me to write a speech and there you go. Well, it must've been a compelling speech.
It was pretty good. I'll have to admit it was pretty good to make it up in a few minutes.
At least for college freshman Pierre. I mean, you might improve on it now, but
listen, consequently, David, I tried that same thing maybe 3 years later. I was taking an advanced presentation course and I had a teacher who was really difficult. So it was one of the final speeches in the course. I think I'm a junior by this time. And I gave a great speech. And then she asked me a question afterwards. She said, hey, when did you write that speech? I said, I wrote it this morning. And she says, here's what I'm going to do for you. Until you start taking your craft seriously, no matter how well you do off the cuff, I'm going to continue to give you a C until you take it seriously. And that just... that got me on track a couple of years later.
What a gift.
Speechcraft.
What a gift to have that teacher do that for you.
I
hadn't thought about this in a long time, but in grad school. So I apparently we share a gift of gab at some level. I mean, partly why we're in the professions we're in, but mm-hmm. I had a class and I was working a couple jobs in grad school, these crazy classes and just everything going on. And I remember a final presentation for this course that was a big deal. It was supposed to be really put together. And I knew my content really well. And I went in and the student body loved it. I mean, it got like a standing ovation kind of thing. And I went, all right, well, nailed that one. had not, as you had shared, did not do the preparation for it at the level that was asked for. And the professor didn't give me a C. I got to say that. I didn't get the C. I got an A minus. And I went in to talk to her. I said, A minus, really? She's like, you and I both know what you did there. I said, you're right. You're right. She said, I get you got a lot going on and you're bright and you got to put the work in.
Yeah.
There's no substitute. So what a gift that you had that experience. So what did that do for you? How did that motivate you? What did that in your career, how did that bear fruit?
It became a theme, just like you said. You know, I find myself in situations afterward. If you fast forward to grad school, just a couple of years later, I found myself teaching freshman speech courses. And I would come across students who reminded me of myself, charismatic, gift of gab, can pull a speech right out of their armpit if they need to. And I would challenge them and push them. And then also as a teacher, there were times where I think I could just go and wing it. And those were some of the worst class periods ever, because I didn't, even though I knew it, I had an undergraduate degree. I was in grad school. I was training to teach. I was being taught by a master teacher. I still had to put the work in to translate what I knew in my head to something that my students can grasp. So it's the same thing for keynotes that I do today, the same thing for training, the same thing for coaching. You can wing it and get an ovation, but you know when it's not right. You know when you didn't put the work in, and when you do, it's just a different type of experience. It's transformational. So I keep that story from that teacher. Her name was Dr. Bauer, in the back of my mind whenever I'm tempted to cut corners. Somebody's going to know, and you don't want to set that example for the people around you. So put the work in.
Powerful. When we were talking before the show, you mentioned that one of your motivating whys, the reason why you do what you do, you said something that really struck me. And it's something that I definitely resonate with, empathize with. And you said, I know what it's like to be a lost leader, and I want to empower other lost leaders to find their way. And I just thought that was so beautiful for a couple of reasons. One, the vulnerability of it and acknowledging that for yourself. And then the compassion for other people that's in that. But it's also something that I saw throughout your book, is that vulnerability combined with the compassion for others, it's something that you're bringing to the table in all of the leadership work that you do. And so, you know, the title of this show is Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious from your perspective, when you talk about, you know, what it's like to be a lost leader, what does that mean?
You go back to 2012. Now, there are many more sections of life where I felt like I was a lost leader. But if you go back most vividly to 2012, I left seminary. You know, I got so many degrees. It's hard to keep count after a while. But after spending a time working in fundraising and development, so many years working as an adjunct faculty, teaching public speaking, interpersonal communication, and getting my feet wet in some nonprofit work as well, kind of felt this urge to go back and do theological training. So I go back, theological training, 3 years. During that 3 years, I am back in the classroom teaching. So it allowed me to keep my sanity while I was doing theological training. So it's time for me to leave seminary school. And the school, my alma mater that I graduated now from 3 times, says, we want to give you a full-time teaching job. Will you stay here and teach? I said, no, I did 3 years of seminary training, theology courses. I want to put this degree to use. So our family packed up. We moved to Bowling Green, Kentucky to lead a small church of 25 people. And a day after being introduced to that small congregation, I sat on my couch slightly depressed, because I realized, even though I had 3 years of schooling, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I was like to the point of tears. So yeah, I could craft a message. I've been, you know, delivering messages ever, even before that freshman year experience, but to lead people, to guide them, to get close to them, to discover, to craft a vision and direction of where we needed to go, I was lost, completely lost. So for about 2 or 3 months, I just kind of sat there. I did the services at church and I kind of sat there and watched TV and got depressed a little bit, drank a lot of Pepsi, ate a lot of honey buns to just get through it all. And then I said, you know what? I need to be able to figure this out, but I don't have to figure it out alone. So I literally started calling people who I knew who had ministry capacities. I called other colleagues, friends, people I had worked with, other professors. I said, talk to me. This is the issue. This is the challenge. This is the perspective. Talk to me. Help me to make sense of it all. You know, shoot it straight. Tell me. And I started just journaling. And after a while, I started sharing my journal notes with other people. And they said, hey, that's pretty good. Maybe you should put that into a book. So that's really how Leading While Green was written. It's an outcome of journal notes that came from the experience of being a 30-year-old new church leader, congregational leader with tons of schooling, but having absolutely no idea what to do. And that feeling isn't just limited to a church religious capacity. It's every time I go somewhere, every time I do a training or keynote or presentation or workshop, and I look in the eyes of some of the emerging leaders, I recognize all of those emotions in their eyes, because those are the same emotions that I was displaying in 2012 in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I said, I know what that feeling is like, that you're waiting for someone to bust in the door and say, ha, I got you. I know you don't know anything. I'm going to let the world know. I want leaders to be able to face that, to face it with all the uncertainty, all of the angst, to face it, to leverage it, to learn from it, and then turn around and help somebody else when they look in their eyes and see that same feeling that's familiar.
Mm, so powerful. And definitely something that I, as I mentioned, that I can empathize with, and that passion and remembering where people are and what that experience is like, and then being able to help them. I mean, that's the motivation for so much of the work we do here at Let's Grow Leaders. And so it really is a privilege to talk with you, Pierre. I appreciate you being here with us. So when you think about leaders losing their soul, we use that phrase not in a religious sense, but in a general sense, what does that look like for you? Particularly, your focus is on emerging leaders and leaders as they're stepping into those roles for the first time, or even before they're quite in the role. What do you see as some of the common ways in which leaders lose their soul?
I think one of the most common ones, David, is when a leader forgets, when they fail to bring back to the forefront of their mind that it's not about you and it never was. It's about the organization, the cause, the mission, and the individuals that you are serving. I remember I was doing a certificate program in principle-centered management, and one of the books that they had us read, I can't remember the author, but one of the books was entitled, I believe, Derailed. And it was the story of corporate leaders who, for whatever reason, had just kind of lost it. You know, the extortion, the manipulation, the abuse that was going on in the companies that ultimately led to them being removed from their position. And one of the easiest traps to fall into is the trap of falling in love with the title, what I call the perks of leadership, and failing to embrace the burden or mantle of leadership, which means you are responsible to the mission that you signed on the line if it was contractually, and you're responsible to the people who are under you. And whenever you make it about you, you know, it's we're humans. So there are moments where we get into our feelings and we, as you know, popular vernacular, feel some type of way. But those moments should be buffeted. It should be a space and a place where you can process those things and get back to the mission and the people you're called to serve. And whenever you forget that, it's a recipe for disaster every single time.
to start a game over, you lose all your influence. As you're talking, you make me think about, I call it the five P's, right? There's, these are the motivations, the reasons people lead. And the ones that don't work out so well are when we're choosing that based on power, prestige, the perks that you're talking about, or even the pennies or pounds or, or the money, right? None of that ever, the money's never worth it for the amount of responsibility. We think it is, and then like, oh, wait a minute, this way exceeds any of that. So the where the focus from a positive influence perspective happens is on people and purpose, right? That's what I hear you saying, is that focus on the mission, on the reason the team exists, the work exists, and then and supporting your people. And if you can keep those things in alignment, you're going to be all right.
One of the things that I remind people, when I share, we do this mission exercise and we pull up, and I've done this at a lot of conferences, I'll pull up 10 or 12 mission statements from the different organizations that are attending. And it's funny, and sometimes it's a little sad, when I call out, hey, what's the mission statement of your organization? And people look at me with that deer in the headlights sort of look. So it's a little funny, but it's also a little sad. And the second part of the exercise, as we put, in big, bold letters on the screen, the mission of the organization, I say, okay, everybody pause. Grab your cell phone, go to social media, go to your photos and scroll through and find a picture that means a lot to you. And I say, okay, where you feel comfortable, because this is your phone and this is your life, where you feel comfortable, show that picture to the person next to you and share why it's so important. And the people, their faces light up and there's laughter. And sometimes there's tears. And I say to all the leaders, all the senior execs in the room, I say, there's two things happening here. One, you're calling people to serve a mission, but sometimes you're not reinforcing the importance of that mission, so people forget. I said, but number two, for a lot of people, the mission of the organization, not for you as the leader, but for other people in the organization, the mission of the organization is really secondary. Their primary mission is the photo they just showed you. You as a leader have to be able to translate for them how fulfilling the mission of the organization helps them fulfill the mission of taking care of the people in the picture and bringing those together. And because if you forget those two, like you said, it's game over.
Connecting that what to the personal why, the bigger why. Yeah, so much in there. It's a great exercise. And I'm just thinking about, some of the word salad mission statements that are still out there that no one knows them because they don't mean anything. They were a product of an exercise, but there's no meaning or attachment, even at the executive level.
I just work with an organization and I put their mission statement on the screen and I was kind of, poking fun a little bit, but I said, listen, folks, I got to take a deep breath to read this whole thing. This is like six slides long. So I know you don't have it memorized. I know you don't have it concretized because it's a lot. It's, man, who pulled out the thesaurus and dictionary and got to work on this one?
And it's not waking you up every day, getting you out of bed.
Not at all.
And a good one will. So, well, let's transition into talking about leading while being green, and not just the book. I mean, you've got the book, but this is really a concept and it's really a passion for you. Mm-hmm. And you've got a number of different ways to help with it. So I'd like to take two approaches to this. And we're going to start by, if you're listening to this show and somebody shared it with you, and you are a green leader, you're getting ready to take that first leadership role, you're in your first leadership role, or maybe you've been leading for a while, but you still feel pretty green. You recognized in Pierre's description, yeah, I'm a little lost. I could use some help. You're looking up and going, man, those people have so much influence in the way that they do it so naturally. And I got none of that. Like, maybe you're feeling that way. Let's start there for our green leaders. What are some of the most important, two or three practical ways of taking those next steps? Where do you advise, recommend people start?
A while ago, I heard a Chinese proverb, and the proverb is, if you want to know the way, ask someone coming back. If you want to know the way, ask someone coming back. And I look back on just the beginning of things for me as a teacher, working in fundraising, working full time as an entrepreneur, having my own company in the leadership development space. how much I made the learning curve much longer and much more difficult than it needed to be because I didn't ask enough people early on for their insight, their perspective, and sharing their experience. Because of this misnomer that in order for you to do well, you have to figure it all out by yourself. And, you know, newsflash for some people, others are well aware of this. No one figures it out by themselves. They might not tell you their secrets or the conversations they had or the coaching they paid for. They might not tell you, but the individuals who experience the most success have multiple people in their corner. So I would say practically, and this is a thing that I've been doing for a long time, and now because we're in the whole COVID deal, put it as part of your personal expenses to pay for people to drink coffee with you. Just add it into your budget. Add it into your professional development budget. I'm going to spend, you know, $50 a month paying people to sit down and have a cup of coffee or, you know, even over a Zoom call and just hang out and talk and ask the questions that you need answers to. John Maxwell has a book, Good Leaders Ask Great Questions, and he shares an experience of, you know, a colleague asking him to sit down with his son. And colleague and John Maxwell sits down with the son. They spend all day, and he talks to his colleague, his friend afterwards, and said, how was it? He said, you know, he's a good guy, but he didn't ask me any questions. He had all day with me and didn't ask me any questions. And some of us are so close to the people in our organizations that we can get insight and perspective from, but we're afraid of looking silly or we're afraid of admitting we don't know something. But for a lot of individuals, when we express that vulnerability, hey, I need some perspective, some insight, some advice, magic word, use advice instead of help, some advice, some counsel, you'll find yourself in the company of people that can really help you. So I would have more conversations more often. Here's the second thing that I would recommend is, and that's the reason that I started a podcast, David. So I know you'll love this. My entire reason for starting a podcast after I wrote Leading While Green, because the title of my podcast is Leading While Green, I did not start a podcast because I wanted to become a podcaster. Honestly, I still don't really want to be a podcaster. I wrote Leading While Green for one reason and one reason only: to hack my own personal development. I could not afford for them to coach me. I did not have the budget to fly and be a part of their thousands and thousands of dollar training program. I could not, they wouldn't respond to an email because they're just, you know, so busy and they have to have a filter. But once I had a platform, I got access to people and I've been able to get world-class advice. The podcast is really about me getting world-class advice and you listening to the world-class advice that I'm getting.
You're spilling the beans, man.
It's been an amazing, amazing journey. I tell everybody, start a podcast and use the podcast to get the help that you need as an emerging leader.
Fantastic advice. Fantastic advice. So you're taking me back. You were talking about our teachers and influences early on. You're making me think about Mrs. Holmes, sixth grade, Force Elementary, second floor. I remember exactly where I was. She looked at the class and she said, "Fools learn from their own experience. Wise men learn from the experience of others."
I love it.
And she looked around the room and then she looked right at me. She said, "David, you understand what I'm saying, right?" Like, why are you calling me out, right? But I have, like you said, I've never forgotten that. And that's what you're talking about. Like, so who can we ask? There's always somebody we can ask. Powerful. So, you know, as you're asking, I would definitely say that has been a recipe for me as well. I can't second that advice strongly enough and love that practical suggestion that you gave, that hack to asking for help is don't call it help, call it advice. I want to make sure we call that out. That was good. Is to say thank you. And to say thank you in a meaningful way. Make sure that you're following up on that. And as people are sharing those insights with you and giving you those opportunities, to be sure and close that loop with a powerful, meaningful thank you. It doesn't have to be expensive. I mean,
yeah.
but it does need to be sincere and heartfelt and connect and show the value that, that for what they have given you and then pass it on.
What's the adage? I'm sure you remember it better than I do. People might not remember what you said, but they remember how you made them feel.
How you made them feel. Yeah. My, was that Maya Angelou?
So when your name comes back up, cause it will, well, the world is smaller than we think. Your name's going to come back up and a person going to say, oh yeah, David. Yeah. I think I chatted with him 2 or 3 years ago. I can't remember what he talked about, what we talked about, but I remember, and he was really cool. He was really nice. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, I got a thank you email from him.
And the other thing,
I remember that.
They'll remember also, and this is that weird trick of human psychology, they'll also remember that you were smart and insightful. Why? Because you were smart enough to see the value in them.
Yeah.
And that's not flattery. It's real. But you acknowledged, hey, you are accomplished in this area and you've got something to share with me and I'd love to learn from you. Well, that communicates our insight and our intelligence because we see the value in them. Mm-hmm. And so part of that memory, part of that impression is that they're going to have that. So all of this, Pierre, reminds me of in your book, you talk about the leadership square.
Yeah.
And because this role of asking for advice is one of the roles that we play. And we're talking about lesson six in Leading While Green. But if you wouldn't mind, talk to us a little bit about the leadership square and the various aspects of this that we occupy in our leadership journey.
There's one particular part of this that I want to highlight for everyone. And I'm not going to say that it's the most important part, but one of the things, and I was talking about this earlier when I said that one of the biggest mistakes that leaders make it, that can derail them is this idea of making it all about them, making it all about them. And I literally saw my life transform and my leadership capacity transform when I started looking around for people to pour into. There's two ways to accelerate leadership growth. One is the questions, the hacking, the advice, the counsel from other people. The other is significantly pouring into, like, being on the hunt to find someone that resonates with you, that you recognize their pattern, their struggle, you recognize yourself in them, and then doing everything that you possibly can to make sure that they experience a level of success. And you literally pour out your cup into theirs, which gives you more capacity to fill up your cup again.
So we're talking about the leader's square and the mentorship and the various elements that go in there. So you're saying, you know, as you're filling their cup, you make more room in yours.
When you look at, we had the John Maxwell reference earlier, right? And John Maxwell's getting older in his career. When you look at John Maxwell, he's very intentional. And his intentionality at this stage of the game, because he realizes he does not have the energy that he used to have, does not have the bandwidth that he used to have. So he is literally training hordes of people in the John Maxwell method. That does two things. Number one, it allows him to build up other leaders with a set of skills, with a platform. They're using his experience and his name to really grow themselves, and great leaders do that. Number two, it's giving him a much longer legacy because there are people who have never heard of John Maxwell. And then when you say, oh, I'm John Maxwell certified, they say, well, tell me the story. And then the story of his growth and his organization and his transition from being a church leader to one of the foremost leadership development experts in the world, that story continues to live on. It's the same thing in our leadership scope and our leadership capacity. The more you pour into someone else, the greater your influence is. And that's why, you know, we write books like, you know, the book that you and Kieran wrote. There's 52 weeks in a year. There's only a handful of companies that you can work with. There's only a handful of leaders that you could coach. But as you look for different ways to give people what you have, that influence grows, it grows exponentially.
Absolutely. All right. So we're talking about green leaders. You're a newer leader, emerging leader, or feel that way. First, we're going to ask, look around, ask for advice, get the help you need. Don't do it on your own. Learn from other people's experience and incorporate that. That's your fast track. All right. Then we're going to be looking for ways that we can be giving to other people. Who can we invest in? I had a student of mine years and years ago. He gave me credit for saying this, but I never said this. I'm pretty sure he said it. And his name was Ivan. And he said, you know, you should always be leading with one hand reaching up to the future and always with one hand reaching back to take somebody with you. And I just thought that was it's a beautiful image that's always stuck with me that gets it, I think, what you're talking about there. So let's do one more on the, if you are the green leader, then we're going to flip it over to the other side. So you're a newer leader, trying to find your footing. We're asking for help. We're taking somebody with us. Give us one more thing we should be focused on.
My wife is studying counseling psychology. And one of the terms that she kind of throws out as she's studying and reading through her stuff and trying stuff out on me, and we have a lot of fun with that, is cognitive distortion. The idea of cognitive distortion is that you paint the picture, you tell the story in such a way that it literally distorts reality. And when that happens, we usually don't look at all of the positive and all of the advantages that we have in a particular scenario or even, you know, in a counseling session. So as a new leader, as an emerging leader, I mean, you just started, maybe you just got your job a couple of weeks ago, or maybe you're a few months into it. It's helpful. A good mental exercise is to take a pen and a piece of paper and write down all the advantages, write down all the privileges, write down all the good stuff that's going on right now. And it could be as simple as thinking, oh, I don't have a ton of experience. Well, let's start super simple and super small, but you do have a job. Like that mental exercise, I have a job and I can, you know, celebrate the fact that I have a job. I have a, you know, a position of responsibility in the company. I have an opportunity to learn. I have mentors and coaches who are ready to support me. I'm a part of an organization that's going to make sure that I learn what I need to learn. There's a path or track for growing in my leadership capacity. And then when you sit down and actually take stock and note of all the things around you that are positive, it allows you to pivot how you think about your role. So you're not just the leader that's just starting and has a long way to go. No, you're a person. Yes, you're just starting, but you have an incredible set of advantages. You have a great support system on the runway, and you have an opportunity to make a real difference in the company that, or the organization that you're a part of. So sometimes when we look at our new role, we look at it from a negative point of view. We look at it from the disadvantages. But it's really helpful for all of my emerging leaders out there to look at it from what's all the advantages that you have. Even sometimes the reality that because you're new, you don't have all the organizational baggage. So the perspectives that you bring, the freshness and the different positioning that you bring is also an asset to the company.
Absolutely. All right. So there you have it. Step three, or suggestion number three, take stock, get some perspective on what all that you are bringing to the table and that can motivate you in that role. All right, so let's flip this around, Pierre. So we've been talking to our newer leaders. Mm-hmm. Now we've got senior leaders, executives listening to the show, and let's take it, flip it around the other way, because for some of us, I think, who was it that said, the curse of humanity is that we forget. And oh my gosh, I wish I could. Is it Kendi? I can't remember who said that. Now I got to look that up. That's going to drive me nuts. But anyway, the curse of our humanity is that we forget. Mm-hmm. So as senior leaders, as executives, what are a couple of things we can do to best cultivate and help our developing leaders to grow, to get the experiences they need, to get the skills that they need? What can we do to give them the shortest learning curve to get them to the influence that we'd like them to have?
I think every executive leader needs to have story time. I think every executive leader needs to have story time. And that can take place in various forms. It could be a podcast interview, a recorded series of videos. It could be a blog. It could be, you know, a company-wide email that you send out. every other week or so. But within the story time, tell the story of your growth and your journey as a leader, especially early on when you felt like you didn't have any idea what you were doing. You know, write it that you can share some of the mistakes and challenges that you've made and what you've learned, and then the opportunities that came as a result of that. Because especially in our generation that we're dealing with now, the super transparent, always connected, everybody's going to read the comments generation, we have really moved away from that great man, great woman leadership theory where the leader is super stoic and unflappable and nothing bothers them at all. And we're just going to do what the leader says because we always listen to our leaders. That era has significantly shifted over the years. And people want to know that the people who are leading them are actually real people with real challenges and struggles who didn't always get it right. So by having a story time, a time where you're sharing your narrative and your journey and giving a piece of yourself, you're actually helping the next generation of leaders say, wait, if the person who's running the company, If they started off as an accountant that messed up a major account, if they started off as a person who was just answering phones and they hung up on a very important person, if they deleted an email by accident, if they tripped over themselves in a meeting or for just went blank in the middle of a presentation, if they could do those things and still be on a trajectory to lead in a powerful way at this stage in their life, well, if they could do it, then I can do it too. And I think it will also help, going to the quote you said, it will also help the senior leader remember, I wasn't always in the C-suite. I didn't always have the corner office or the expense account or the frequent flyer miles or the deference when you walk into a room. I didn't always have the titles and the emails, fancy email signature with the headshot. I didn't always have that. I started somewhere. I made some mistakes and I learned. And I grew. And by telling the stories, it helps them better resonate with people who are in the positions now that sometimes they were 20 and 30 years ago.
Such stellar advice. I hope everyone listening, if you are in a position where you've got some folks who are learning and growing and you've been there and done that, are you making room for story time? So powerful. And the number one way that we communicate and learn and connect as human beings. So it's such a powerful suggestion. All right, Pierre, you're doing great, man. What else you got for us? Let's give it, you have one more suggestion for our senior leaders and executives to help their greener leaders to thrive.
Yeah.
I thought you might. I just,
I mean, we could go all day, right? it's something that I call the be with factor. And it's creating spaces in the calendar, creating spaces in the work cycle to just be with your people, not to be the boss, not to point out and critique. Those times are necessary. Let's focus on the work. Let's look at what we're doing. Let's steer the ship in the right direction. Let's even listen to story time in my journey. But sometimes people just want to be around you and know that you're a human being. Now, you can't do that depending on the size of your organization. You can't do that with everybody. That's just not possible. But when you look at your org chart, who are the individuals who need the coffee with you, who need a quick chat with you, a bite to eat with you, and not just you as CEO, not just you as president, not just you as C-suite, but you as a colleague in the company that's working toward the same mission. And sometimes in those moments, those are moments where you don't say anything as the leader, where you just sit. And you listen, you say, this is safe zone. You need to get it off your chest. You need to express an idea or perspective. You need to let it out. We're going to do that for 15 or 20 minutes. And I'm just going to sit and I'm going to listen to you and I'm going to take it all in. I'm not going to try to correct you. I'm not going to try. It's all going to be respectful, but I'm not going to try to say, oh, you shouldn't feel that way, or we're doing X, Y, and Z. I'm going to give you a time to express how you feel and what your perspective is. When you look at conflict resolution, when you look at organizational tension, a lot of times it comes down to the fact that people just want to know, they don't even want you to always solve their problems. They just want to know that you heard them and absolutely, that you respected their humanity. And even if you didn't agree, you listened to their perspective. And I think as C-suite leaders, there's a great opportunity there to grow influence and connections in the organization. If people know that even if you don't make all the decisions that they like, at least you're willing to listen.
Knowing that you've been heard makes it a lot easier to go along with a different decision than the one you would have made, but where you heard, it's easier to go with it. Mm-hmm. Right. And know that somebody's listening. And I'm thinking that's not just good advice for our senior leaders. That's good advice for every single one of us, is that that presence, the act of presence, of being present with people as a human being, as a fellow traveler on this planet, and truly listening and hearing where people are coming from. You're going to make better decisions as a result. You can't help but to make better decisions. And your people are going to be more connected to you, to the work, to everything that's going on. So two powerful suggestions for our senior leaders helping to cultivate our greener leaders and help them to thrive. So we've got five different suggestions, which really apply for all of us, because no matter where you are, there is some place you're going and somebody to ask about something. And so we never, starting with the very first suggestion you gave us, we never outgrow that, do we?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, if you stop learning, you've pretty much just stopped in totality. There's always something to learn. Life is changing so fast, and there's always something you don't know. That's why I want to quick suggestion, another one really quick, is I'm starting something, David, and you see behind me, you know, all of these books. You know, if you're listening to this, just imagine. There's a principle that's called the anti-library. Anti-library. It is to surround yourself with more books than you could ever read in your lifetime. And the idea is that it keeps you both intellectually humble and hungry, because you realize there's a lot to learn in this world that you don't know.
I didn't know that.
And you realize you have an opportunity to learn more.
I didn't know I was a proponent of that, but I've been a good practitioner of that methodology. And sometimes my pocketbook doesn't like that so much, but my wallet gets upset with me. But yeah, I have overspent my personal discretionary budget a couple times, not more than once, I have to say, on books. And not all of them are read, but you're absolutely right. All right. So multiple different suggestions that no matter where you are in your leadership are going to help you in your journey to get there faster, to help your leaders develop and thrive, and ultimately improve your influence. Great suggestions, and just a taste of what Pierre has available for you. So Pierre, where can we connect with you? Where can we get your book, learn more about you? And we'll get all of these into the show notes and have the links there available, but go ahead and tell our listeners where to find you and your work.
Yeah, the best place to reach out to me is on my website, pierrecquinn.com. That's Pierre, the letter C, Quinn.com. And I hang out a lot on LinkedIn. So if you go to LinkedIn and you type in Pierre Quinn, and you'll see my face. I work with leaders, so that's going to come up in the title. You're trying to say, which Pierre Quinn is it? The one that specifically talks about empowering leaders. That's me. I'd love to connect with you.
All right. Pierre, thank you so much for being a part of the show and the conversation. Really appreciate your time and sharing your wisdom with us today. As we're coming up on, we're recording this in real time for those listening later on. We're recording it a little bit before Thanksgiving 2020. And so we're still mid-pandemic. Who knows how much longer we got to go on this? I mean, there's some encouraging signs of vaccines and all that on the horizon, but we still have a lot of uncertainty. And so you've got a whole nother book, Leading When Scared, and there is the uncertainty that we face as leaders and that our businesses are facing, our teams are facing. And I wonder if you wouldn't mind, as a parting note of encouragement or inspiration, when we're leading through uncertainty and change, what do you have for us there?
I found, not just from listening to great mentors and friends and coaches, but also through personal experience, is that transformation is always on the other side of the conversation you're afraid to have. Transformation is always on the other side of the conversation you're afraid to have. Now, here's the thing. If you're thinking, man, this fear is just going to paralyze me, collapse me, it won't. What's going to be necessary is that you have the conversation while you're afraid. Do it while you're scared. I mean, that's what all of the greatest leaders do. They continue to push forward. They continue to take a next step. Even though your throat is parched and your hands are sweaty and your knees are shaking, the real key to activating courage and to leading while scared is to take the next step while you're scared. And you'll find the more you lean into those uncomfortable conversations with courage, the more you'll experience the personal and professional transformation that everyone around you needs you to have, but more importantly, that you're looking for yourself.
Lean into it. So if it's feeling uncomfortable, if it's feeling like the thing you don't want to do, my principle is that's probably the number one thing that should be on your to-do list, is to take care of that thing that's making you that uncomfortable. That's going to do all the things that Pierre just said it would do for you. So lean in, take action, keep learning, get that stack of books that's bigger than you can possibly read, ask for help, and you're on your way to being the leader you'd want your boss to be. Pierre, thanks again, man.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.